From UCB Comedy Studios, this is the UCB Digital Podcast. I'm Nate Russell. All right, y'all. Welcome back to another episode of the Digital Podcast. If you're listening to this as it's releasing, the book club episode is coming very soon. So if you're participating in our Makers Book Club, you've got very little time left. We're recording our episode of the show August 15th at 4 p.m. That's when we're going to sort of have our book club meeting. I think we'll definitely sip some Bronx beer. Maybe we'll get some whiskey for the occasion too as we sip our Makers Book Club. Yeah, that's right. Sophie's here too. Hey, Sophie.
Hey, what's up?
We're getting dangerously close to time to see who's reading the book. I'm almost there. I'm ready.
We should. I mean, we should all be honest, and I think start with a poll of who truly read. You know how much we each read of the book.
500 pages in the summer. You know who's a dedicated reader, who's not. But excited to sort of sit down and do it. And if anybody out there has read the book, whether during our Maker Book Club process or before, feel free to join in. August 15th at 4 p.m. Facebook / UCB Comedy. We'll be live talking about the book and chatting with y'all if you're so inclined. So we hope that you'll join us. And if you missed this round, pick up a book the next time. We'll find something shorter.
I hope so.
The next one has to be like a 10-page book.
Yeah.
Just to make
it
worth
it. Next one's a picture book. Mm-hmm. Children can join in.
That's right. That's right. And of course, that episode will also launch, I believe we're targeting August the 29th for that episode to come out as part of this feed. So if you missed the live feed, you can check in with us then. Welcome back to another episode of the show. Today's guest, Alyssa Limparis, is here. Alyssa's a friend of yours too, Sophie, right?
She sure is. She's great.
Now, Alyssa and I first met a couple of years back, and we talk about this at the top of the interview. She was doing sales for UCB. She was working working here.
That's right.
And the project that we worked on together, we sort of touched on it. We did a branded content piece that part of what was sold into it by the agency was that it was a concept we were pitching for TI to execute on. And so it wound up being this, it was really fun. It was like a fun project where we essentially like had a concept we executed at like at a shoe store on 34th Street. And we had a bunch of UCB improvisers come in and also sort of like build a little scene with TI.
Oh, cool.
Who, you know, gave us a decent amount of time as far as like a celebrity of that status goes.
Yeah.
It was like an all day thing, but it was a very fun thing, but it was like a weird project to sort of, so I feel like she and I were in the trenches together because there is an element of like working on a project like that where you're like, you know, we have somebody who neither of us know, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And also somebody who's like not in comedy at all.
Yeah.
Right. And we are like, what's happening?
And the main thing everyone is concerned with is keeping that person happy.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So like, there's an element of that that goes into it. And you're also trying to balance just like, you know, time of day and a huge crew and all those sort of things. So we definitely went through the shit together, but funny because that feels like another lifetime ago for her.
Yeah.
Alyssa now is, I mean, I said it here, she's one of the more prolific people on the scene right now.
Mm-hmm.
She works for a place called The Scene.
I was going to say, too. Literally The Scene.
The Scene. She's on The Scene, where she's like the face of their Facebook Live content. I saw she's in a bunch of recorded videos, including a music video, has had a bunch of things go like crazy viral in the last 6 months.
She recently, and this happened since recording, but she made a music video and George Takei posted it, I think, over the weekend. So it's gone viral, and the comments are insane.
Yeah, well,
they're so mean.
Yeah, I bet. But you know, all viral stuff is good in some ways because I think
all
it's pushing her out there more, which is great.
Yeah.
And she's taking full advantage of that. And we sort of talk about it here at the top of this interview, but she was definitely motivated to stop fucking around and get serious about what she wants in life, in part because she lost her dad a couple of years ago, which is right around the same time as when she left UCB. It was like that was all sort of happening. She was going home a lot. And when he passed, it sort of like was a real reset button for her and a real moment to say, let me go out and get what I want out of my career, you know?
Yeah.
Which, you know, is something that, you know, we talk about here on the show, something that I definitely recognize too, because as folks out there, if anybody's familiar with UCB knows, you know, Timmy Wood, which we talk about here on the show, was somebody who really shook up UCB comedy when he passed now a little over a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's definitely like, there are these moments where you have to sort of sit back and say, what am I doing? what's the stuff that's important to me, what's not, both in life and in your career. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, unfortunately, it is that sort of thing where a passing is the thing that really gets that motivation going.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's true.
So it was nice to sort of sit down and talk to her about that, because I think it's a very recognizable point. And also it's something that has, through loss, kickstarted her into like a new phase of her career and into the kind of like pace she's working at now, wherein she seems, you know, pretty happy.
Yeah.
And happy with the work she's doing. And also the stuff she's doing is really fun. I also saw a bunch, we talked here, she's going out to the Fringe Festival when we recorded this. I saw the pictures from that. Seems like that went well.
Yeah.
She's all over the place. She's doing a lot.
Yeah.
She's doing shows every night of the week, which is great.
Yeah, it's true. Yep.
So excited to sort of sit down and talk with her. As always, we sat down and chatted while drinking a Bronx beer. Bronx, of course, the official house beer of the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. We sipped the Slow Your Roll IPA while we had this chat. The Slow Your Roll, of course, one of the staples of the Bronx catalog, one of my favorites. And of course, it has that mango, guava, and passion fruit flavors mixed into the IPA with a crisp, tart finish.
Wow.
Yeah.
So unique.
It's a delicious beer. And everyone universally agrees the best can. It's great.
Breathtaking can.
Breathtaking. Go to thebronxbrewery.com to see a selection of all of their excellent craft beers. And we enjoyed one while we had our conversation. All right, let's jump right into it. Today's episode, our conversation with writer, performer, jack of all trades, Alyssa Limparis. All right, cheers on a summer Friday.
Cheers on a summer Friday.
You know, we're here, but it's summer Friday for somebody out there.
Yeah. It's Friday and it's a summer.
So, Alyssa, let's get this out of the way. You know, when we knew each other,
yes,
it was a different life for you. That was a different lifestyle. You were doing sales.
No, I can't believe it. Even being here, it's like, it's not sales. That's generous. I would harass. I was paid to harass people. I just remember my job was just calling strangers.
Yeah.
I don't pick up the phone for like my mom. And I was tasked with calling strangers. One, having them pick up, and two, selling them an improv workshop.
So you seem much happier.
I am much happier.
Although we did have that fateful day together where T.I. hated us both.
Oh my God. Yes. That was such a what a lark, where we sold this thing to T.I. and we did a prank show for T.I. and yeah.
Yeah, it was an interesting day.
Interesting day.
So a lot's happened between then and now. And boy, oh boy, do I feel like your stuff on the internet is constant. Now.
Yes.
You're working at a pretty frantic pace.
Yes.
No?
What a therapist would say, manic. But frantic pace is a nice way to put it. Yes. Other people say, you need to be medicated. I'm doing a lot.
Yeah.
When I was here, my dad was sick and I was going back and forth a lot. And I kind of lost. I didn't lose, you know. It was wonderful, and I wouldn't have traded it, but I lost a couple of years of progress.
I know what you mean.
And so I think since I've come back from that, I've just been on this pace of like, I gotta go.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean. What's funny is I feel that way about having kids. It's not the same, but it definitely was like, I feel like I spent it, the first year that I had my first child, I was like, this year, it's gone. Like, I don't even remember what happened.
I know.
It's gone from my brain. I just was like on no sleep. Your brain's
adjusting.
You're
in like survival mode.
Yeah. And now, like, when I had a baby in February again of this year, I was like, I just need to assume the next 6 months are chaos.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm still in it right now.
Oh.
So I wonder if I'm going to even remember this.
Yeah. Yeah, man, you're not even looking at me. Yeah, dude, where are you?
But it's like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, there definitely is that idea where it's like, you don't want to trade it.
No.
Because you're living in it.
Yes.
And it also helps you to focus on what's important, too.
Totally.
I feel way less time now with kids being like, I don't have time to fuck around.
Yeah.
I want to do something that feels important, feels like it's worth doing for me because
time is precious.
Right?
Yes. So, yes, on the opposite end, I think I feel so strongly that like I could die at any... I'm just very aware of death and I'm just like, I don't.
When was it that your dad passed?
It'll be 2 years in this coming October.
So at this point, almost 2 years.
Almost 2 years. But he was, you know, sick for a year before then. So almost 3 years of, yeah.
And I know that, like, I've seen some of the writing that you've done, sort of like saying that the year afterwards sort of became a great year for you professionally.
Yeah.
And feeling like there was some motivation to sort of like get your ass in gear. Does it still have that urgency? How do you sort of keep that urgency as time goes on?
I feel very grateful for, my dad, because I do feel like he lived very aggressively all the way till the end. And so I still feel that very strongly. I don't think it's worn off. I think maybe I'm making a little more time for not working now. I'm trying to take more days of just relaxing. But I think it's still.
Some of that urgency is sort of like at a certain point. Distraction in some way, right?
To
give yourself purpose to go forward.
Yes.
But there also seems to be such value in the lesson of how to live and how to make decisions and how to move forward with career stuff and with personal stuff that feels like you're in the moment and making good decisions. And I'll also say that happened here when Timmy Wood died.
I bet.
That shook this place to its core.
I can't imagine, because his wife was working here with you.
Yeah, Julie was the department. And it is like, and everybody who was touched by him, I've seen it in them too. Like, they really evaluated their lives and said, what do I want? Like, honestly, Timmy was a big reason why we decided to have a second kid quickly.
Yeah.
We were like, no, fuck. What's important? We want this. Let's go.
Because
there's no guarantee that you're going to have it tomorrow.
That's how I feel. I write about this a lot, but I was like really depressed. I still deal with depression, but I was like a very depressed person all through, up until my 20s, up until my dad got sick. And I just feel like my dad's death woke me up. Like, I think I just assumed that we all got a life. And like, assumed like you got it a few times over. And it's like, just watching someone so healthy like Timmy or like my dad just like disappear was like, oh, fuck. Like, this is all we got. And so, I think it does just light a fire under you of like every day, as trite as it is, like every day is a gift. Even if it's bad, it's like, well, did you have a good coffee? Was there one thing that was good? Yeah.
Sure. How do you turn that motivation into creativity? What was that for you to sort of like turn it into, active creative progress?
I think that was what I realized, this is what I want. This is what I've always wanted. I've been afraid to say I want to be an actress or I want to be a comedian. For some reason, I've been afraid to say what I want or do what I want. And having my dad die, I was like, no, fuck that. Just do it. So I think,
What has it meant, though, tangibly? Does it mean that you started to write more? Did it mean that you started to take more shows? Like, what was the approach that you sort of have taken to get to, you say manic, I say prolific, mode that you're in right now?
Yeah, I think it was a combination of factors, but I do think like taking control back was a big thing, which probably felt like too. Losing my dad was so out of control that I think I stopped just like waiting to be kind of booked on shows or waiting to be booked on people's projects. And like, I wrote a web series and I wrote, like an hour solo show that I do on my own. And I got this great job at Condé Nast where I get to make videos for an online platform every day.
Yeah.
So it kind of just became like more of a self-starting thing, where instead of in the past, I might have like auditioned more or tried to, get booked on shows or get on a team. Now it was like, who cares? What do I want to do?
And also that was sort of like the time when you made the transition away from the sales stuff too.
Yeah.
Which doesn't seem like a coincidence. It also because that's another tricky part is how do you get enough to get going? Because it's not like you were doing the sales thing out of true love for that job.
Oh, I loved it. Yeah, no, not at all.
So then it was out of necessity. It was out of like, I need to pay bills, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So turning the corner between that and sort of like, because to say, every day is a gift and I want to be more creative, that doesn't necessarily mean that you have an apartment and food.
Right. Yeah. Oh, sorry. No, I'm homeless. For the listeners, I should clarify. Yeah, I don't have a home. If you have a couch, call me. I got really lucky. But, I think the sales thing, that was another You know what's so funny about that? My dad was a salesman for his whole life, and I swear to God, of all the things I've done, he was most proud that I worked as a cold caller salesperson for however long I did it here. Yeah, so I am happy I did it. But yeah, that was a control thing too. Like, that job was so out of my control. It was just, you had to wait for someone to want to buy something from you. And I was like, so yeah, my current job, I started as a copywriter at Condé Nast, the Scene. And then I just slowly but surely just kept, I knew that they were going to need videos. And I was like, this is what I, you know, I can do this. And so I would just pitch them stuff all the time. And then I probably did that for like 6 months. And then eventually we started making videos on the Scene. And I kind of just inched
my way
in there.
Yeah, we were able to sort of be... You were like, I'm here already. I provide an answer to, you know, what you need.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, let's do it.
Under their desk.
I mean, but you also, but it also seems like the pitching process or putting yourself out there is something that maybe came as a result of the mindset of like, I need to go get it now.
Yeah, definitely. I think I would have been too afraid. It was a 3 week copywriting gig. I think if I hadn't been in the state I was in, I probably would have just been like, all right, my time here is done.
Yeah.
Whereas this, and I needed it so badly too, because I was just so... I had just been stuck at home watching someone leave me. And so to just be at a place, And I'd waitressed beforehand and I'd done sales. So it was really nice for me just to even just be in an air-conditioned office.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. And so at this point now, like, what is the sort of diet of stuff that you're doing? You also mentioned that you're doing the Fringe Festival.
Yeah, I'm doing the Providence Fringe Festival next week.
First time for that?
First time for that.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So that'll be great.
What's that show?
So it's called No Bad Days, and it's about losing my dad. And yeah, it's mostly stand up about losing my dad and living without my dad now. Yeah. And I did it here a few times, and now I'm taking it kind of on the road. I'm going to Boston, I'm going to Providence Fringe, and then I'll do it here at the Cinderblock Festival in the fall.
That's great.
Yeah.
Right, because New York doesn't have a Fringe Festival.
They don't have
a
Fringe.
I saw that.
Yeah.
That's fucked up.
I know.
That's fucked up.
What the fuck?
Yeah, thanks, Obama.
Thanks, Obama. You know, and that is unbelievable.
Hello, I'm Madeline Walter.
I'm Ben Axelrad, and we're both hypochondriacs.
I think I'm sick when I'm not.
And anytime I'm sick, I think I'm a goner for sure.
We're the hosts of Definitely Dying, the podcast that's a safe space for listeners and funny friends to talk openly about their medical dramas, both real and imagined.
We're part of the UCB Comedy Podcast Network, with new episodes released every Tuesday.
You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever else you love to get your podcasts.
Stay healthy.
So that's cool. So it also sounds like then you've sort of using that life stuff directly in comedy too. Because the stuff you're doing for the Scene is not that.
No.
It's not
nicely
that job.
Nicely put. But yeah, no, it's not. Yeah. I mean, I think a balance is key. I'm just
imagining you doing a Facebook Live of the material from your Fringe show. Being like, the audience being like, what is this?
Like,
this is not why I subscribed to this.
Me putting lipstick on while talking about my dad in a coma. Yeah, no. Yeah, no, it's very different. But I think that's key too. Like, there was I think it's helpful for me to like, I came back and I was like, I can't do regular stand-up again. I can't like just do like Tinder jokes about a guy I don't even know anymore. Mm-hmm. So like, yeah, I basically the Fringe Festival helped, or like this show has helped me put all my dark, really dark material into one place.
Yeah.
And then the Scene helps me kind of do more light and fun stuff.
That's nice.
But basically, yeah, I mean, whenever anyone kind of even asks for like advice or what I do, it's just like, I'm just, yeah, I think all my free time is spent doing something for a new project or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a lot of different great friends who are, that's a helpful way to do it too. Before, I think I was trying to do everything on my own. Coming back, it's like, oh no, just do it with a lot of friends. It's so much better and easier.
Yeah?
Yeah.
In what way is that collaborate? Like, in what way is you collaborating?
Yeah, I know, as I talk about my solo show. I have a podcast with my friend Mae Wilkerson called Crazy in Bed, which is about being crazy and staying in bed. and then I have a web series with my friend Gwyn Ballard called Business Casual.
Cool.
And I have a play I'm putting on with Shannon O'Dell that we just wrote. So I just think it's nice to gear up with other people and do different projects with them. That's helped me a lot versus just only doing stand-up or only kind of writing my own stuff.
It
gets exhausting. It's too hard.
Yeah, and it can be a little bit lonely in that way. Like, I don't do stand-up, but I understand it to, and the art form is, it's you.
Totally.
It's you and your thoughts. There's a reason why it's sort of like something that is like a lot of self-starters go do.
Yeah.
But there isn't that element of collaboration that can sometimes help propel.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, stand-up's great in that sense. You have control. You can do your own thing. It's fun to be on the mic. But yeah, it's like Not all the time. I need to be with people.
Sure.
Yeah.
I can dig it, man. Let's talk about the stuff you're doing at, like, at the scene in some ways. Like, so that's sort of like filling a checking a box for you. That's sort of like the light stuff, the sort of like stuff that feels like it's getting some good attention. That thing with your mom went crazy viral,
totally.
Huh?
Yeah.
You were on the, I saw an article on the Today Show, which is like, that's the definition of viral, right? Is when like the Today Show goes like, hey, moms of America.
Yeah, right. When people in the suburbs are seeing
that's when you know you've made it.
Yeah, when people in my mom's school were like, oh my God, you're famous.
Yeah, exactly.
My mom loved that. It was so great. Yeah, we did this video about the differences between me at 27 and my mom at 27.
So simple, but also so great.
Man, Nate, that's the key. I feel like we made this music video recently, and it was so fun and so complicated and like not that it bombed, but it bombed.
Yeah.
And then you do something. That video I did with my mom, we literally just shot on my laptop, and I edited it probably all within 2 hours, start to finish. And it got, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
So walk me through that project in particular. So how does that project, like, come to fruition for you? Was that something that, was that a bit from stand-up that you were doing? Or, like, where does that idea come from?
Yeah. I mean, the scene is great because it's a new brand, and they're very open to anyone's, they trust our team with our ideas. So, yeah, that idea, I just kind of, a lot of my brand when I was living at home was a lot of, like, now my friends are getting engaged and I'm at a charity concert with my parents. Like, mm-hmm. that was a lot of what I joked about when I was home. And so I hadn't done those jokes a lot. And I was like, I think there's a video here that I could, like, resurface this. Because now I have a boyfriend who I love, who I've dated for 2 years. And, like, I live back in the city on my own. So it's not even as relevant anymore. But they were jokes that I used to do all the time. So I was like, while I have my mom here, let's try it in video form.
Yeah.
So she came into my office and we sat on a couch and I hadn't told her the questions yet. And we just did them in front of the camera. And
that's
then
great.
On iMovie, I edited it. I showed it to my boss. She was like, yeah, I dig it. Let's do it.
So the process is even that sort of like simple. That sounds great. So it's not like there has to be a lot of layers of like pitching and approvals. You sort of like have some latitude to be like, here's a thing. And if they said no, what's the word? You lost a little time.
That's what the beauty of it is for me too, is like, yeah, if they say no, then okay, now I have a new video that I can just put on my page. Like,
sure.
it's not that I can't use it. If not, it depends. That was such a cheap project that I didn't have to go through a big pitch process.
Sure.
If it's like,
you're not
music,
asking for much.
I'm not asking for much. I'm just showing like, hey, here's something I did. Do we like it? Whereas something like a music video where it's going to take a lot more, time and money, then that's like, okay, we have to all be on board with this and assess that this is worth our time. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it goes out there and sort of like gets attention. Like, what was the, like, was that the first really big thing?
No, I have one of my first videos I ever did at the scene was with my coworker Tiffany Bender. And we did a kind of sad video about, we both deal with eating disorders. And we each kind of wrote down what we thought about our body. And then we said it out loud to the other person, directed at them.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of with the message of, like, if you wouldn't say it to your best friend, don't say it to yourself.
Sure.
I think that one really blew up I think that one got like 15 million or something crazy.
Yeah.
But it was fun to have some, but I think it didn't get as much press because it was so dark and sad. Whereas everyone's like, yeah, we'll watch, but on our own terms.
It's not Today's Show.
It's not Today's Show.
It's not inspiring the, you know.
No. Whereas, this one was the biggest like media coverage thing that we'd gotten. Yeah.
That's cool. That's rad, man. And I see that you're doing a lot of like Facebook Live content too, which, you know, we've been doing a lot of that here. It's such a fun format, but I guess like what's your sort of like approach with like Facebook Live ideas and what sort of makes an idea good for that format in your perspective?
Yeah, we've been doing those longer than we even made real videos. We've been doing Facebook. I've done so many Facebook Lives in my time there.
You like it?
I like it. It's helped me so much with, it's great for improvisers. It's just
that's
like
exactly
improv.
What I've been saying.
That's
yeah.
it. It's helped me so much because it's like you have to just hold an audience for, you know, 30, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Man, from everything we've done, I think the key is just that if you're not going to produce a really nice video, so if it's going to be live, there has to be a reason why it's live or the audience doesn't give a shit.
That's true.
Like, so I think if they're involved, they have to be involved in some capacity.
It's a little like, did you ever do Periscope?
No, it came and went so fast.
I like Facebook Live way better than Periscope. I mean, Periscope was fun, but it was just about the comments. If you weren't just literally sitting there responding to the comments, it was like everyone would leave.
Yeah.
The Facebook format seems to give you a little bit more like, it's got to be something somewhat visually interesting so that they stop.
Definitely.
It's got to be something that like can communicate without sound somewhat.
Yeah.
Because what's the percentage of people that actually click through and listen
exactly.
to it?
Exactly. It has to be visual. Like, I do this thing at the beginning of every one of my feeds where I just dance. I, like, almost always start
yeah?
dancing. Yeah. Because I hate scrolling down a feed and looking and watching people just, like, deadpan stare and
yeah.
then turn into, like, hey, welcome to the lot. It's
right.
like, no, you don't want to see that.
Right, that thing like on the news.
On the news,
like,
exactly.
Yeah, like reporters standing there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, Jim, I'm here. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, Jim, we've been here.
Yeah,
yeah. yeah.
We've seen you looking blank,
see
like
you,
a
Jim.
Corpse.
yeah, buddy. oh, God. Yeah, so I like dancing before mine, but.
That's cool.
For example, I used to do a show with a friend, and now I do one just straight to the audience. And without fail, the straight to the audience does better just because
yeah.
they're in it with me versus
sure.
being like, yeah, that's two people doing their own thing. They don't need me here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or it has to be something where there's a big payoff and they want to see what happens at the end.
Okay.
Those are my two probably big things.
A big payoff at the end
big
or something that's like
end.
Super interactive.
Yeah.
That's fun. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely been something that like you were saying with improv, it's sort of like a fun place to let improv, you know, improvisers come in with some sort of concept and like really execute well.
Totally.
It's that interactive piece that's like the tricky part.
It's hard.
Yeah,
it's
the tricky
hard.
Part. And also like I find that as like when you're hosting them, you have to sort of be checking in and, you know, resetting what's happening
always.
To
if you're just tuning in, hi.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why I do that all yeah.
All the time.
Yeah, exactly. It's hard. But it's becoming more God, Facebook's becoming more just like TV, it feels. Like even the Facebook streams are
well,
they look professional. Like
yeah.
they're
it's, and it's literally going to become TV, right?
Exactly.
Like they just bought Nicole Byers show's coming back.
On Facebook. Wow.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty wild.
My brother works at Facebook too, which is fun.
Cool.
So it's like, yeah, he makes it and I use it.
he makes it and I use it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool, man. Well, I mean, so I guess like it does sound like a lot of good things are happening. You said that you were sort of making some more time for like life stuff. Does it feel like you've been at is it an unsustainable pace? Like what's sort of like, what's the next 6 months going to look like?
I know.
How are you feeling about the rest of 2017?
Oh man. I think that I think now I'm kind of throwing a bunch of stuff at the wall and
yeah.
just like throwing it. And I'm just hoping that at some point one of the things will be like, no, this is something that's sticking more. So you can drop a couple of the things that are
yeah.
taking up your time and focus more on just this one. So I'm hoping that in the next 6 months, I'll get some clarity on like, okay, what's the thing that's really working and stick with that versus working on like seven different projects at once.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Though it is funny though, because it's like there always is such a need to keep so many balls in the air.
I think so.
Because you never know which is the one thing that's going to do it. And even when something like goes through, it's like we've been reading, we have a book club on this show.
Oh yeah, we have a book club.
So
well, no one told me about
the
book
we
club.
We read a filmmaking book, and so right now I'm reading this filmmaking book. It's called The Real Truth, and it's talking like right now I'm reading with a section where it's like all about like how film financing falls apart, even as people are like in production. You know what I mean?
Oh, I bet.
And so like just that thought that it's like the hustle, you can have hustled so hard, you can get your thing together, you can get a green light, you can have all the money in place. You get out there, you get everything set up, you have your whole schedule set up, you got your script, you got your actors, you got everything, and then it's like, no, wait, no, there's no check.
Hold on,
there's
sorry.
No
wait, we
yeah.
wait. Uh oh, there's a miscommunication.
Yeah.
No money.
Put this on pause, go find something else to do.
Oh, totally. Oh, I mean,
there's no guarantees.
There's no,
no guarantees.
And I think I'm just a nervous and anxious person. So like, it really helps me to have a lot of things going on. Cause then if I have a set that bombs, it's like, you know what? You got to get up tomorrow and do this other shoot. And
yeah.
so you don't have time to like think about that anymore. Whereas if I was just focused on one thing, I think like if I only had one audition all day, oh man, I'd be kicking myself for 24 hours about how I should have said like buy toothpaste a little bit better, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can dig it.
So, yeah, I think it's a balance. I think I want to drop some things eventually so I can focus more on. But, yeah, I think you always kind of got to keep a lot in the air.
If you have your druthers, what are the things that take that go to the fore? If it's like ideally, like what are you trying to get to the forefront? Is it because you're doing a lot of stuff on stage?
I'm
right?
doing a lot of stuff on stage,
like
too.
Like stand up, you're doing plays, you're doing one person show. Like, is
yes.
that like is that a format that you're really passionate about? Or is it,
I am.
Or is it about getting that stuff so that you can have a pilot or a movie script or, you know what I mean?
I know. I think ideally I would have, I want to be on a show or have, you know, be making movies or be in movies.
Yeah.
That's
okay.
The ideal.
Okay.
But I love being on stage, and I think that I'm hoping that always in my career I'll just make time to do performances on stage. But in an ideal world, I would rather be on
the on camera side is more attractive.
Yeah,
because I was, you know, you see those articles about like TJ Miller quitting Silicon Valley, and he's like, I want to be a good stand up.
Yep.
Some people have that as like that's the thing. That's their first
love. Yeah.
It's their love. They want that relationship with an audience. They want that lifestyle experience.
Yep.
And other people are like, yeah, I want to do that so that I can get on
totally.
TV.
Totally. Yeah, yeah. Okay, TJ, let's swap. Yeah. But TJ Miller is someone who is the most electric, fucking
really
dynamic person on stage that, like, what he does. Yeah, I mean, he's.
You're right.
He's someone
true.
Who it's like. No matter how great he is on TV, watching him live, you'll never know what's going to happen, and he'll surprise you, and he'll surprise himself. And so I get that he would want to, but I also think it's just a balance. I bet if I did, you know, if I worked on a movie for 3 years, I'm sure that by the end of it, I'd be like, get me on a stage now. Like, I need immediate,
So that balance thing.
It's a balance,
It's a balance thing.
But I think, I love the theater, but the... again, not to go back to death, but I do like the concreteness and the foreverness of having things that are filmed versus the ephemeral nature of the stage.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, that's a funny balance, too. It's like that is what I love about improv, is the ephemeral
interesting.
Nature.
Interesting. Mm.
But also, if that was all I was doing, I would think I wouldn't. You know what I mean?
Agreed. It's great for...
It's a great exercise. It's a great creative expression. I love the art form of it.
Yes.
I love the experience of it. It does give you that intimacy with an audience that is not like anything else.
Yes.
But if that was all I was doing, I would feel like... It makes it like...
Same deal. With the audition, you'd be like, I should have... Yeah. Why was my third beat? Why did I do... Yeah.
And also, it's a matter of like, right now, it's like when you go home for Christmas and you have to talk to extended relatives, and they're like, what do you do? And you're like, I do this thing on stage that's totally ephemeral and never is captured and goes away instantly.
They're like, well, what about your brother's a lawyer? Why don't you... Do you ever think about lawyer?
Yeah. Or whereas, like, by contrast, now you're going to, you know, go home this year and they'll be like, oh, yeah, that video we saw you on the Today Show.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
We saw that. We understand
We get that.
Yeah, we understand
Today
what that is.
Show, yeah.
You must have made $1 million.
Yeah. It's like, Oh, man. Funny part is I did make $1 million off that. Yeah, I think I've learned to love improv again too. I definitely went through a phase where I was just not liking it. And I think you're right that like having a balance and doing other stuff, it just makes the stage time a lot more exciting.
Yeah, that's true. Are you doing it a lot?
Not a lot, but every now and again.
Sure.
I'm doing stand up more, but yeah, every once in a while I'll do shows with my indie team.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's great. Rad, man. Well, thanks for taking the time.
Thanks for
Good
having me.
Up.
Great to be back here.
You enjoy this beer?
Yeah, Slow Your Roll Bronx Brew. You guys have you guys always have these beers that have like spices in them. It's like turmeric. There's always.
Yeah, this is a very spicy beer.
It is.
I like this one though.
I like it.
It's nice on a hot day.
It's nice on a hot day.
Cool. Well, cheers and thanks for doing it.
Cheers. Thanks for having me.
And that will do it for episode number 57 of the UCB Digital Podcast. Thanks to Alyssa for sitting down, taking the time to chat, drinking a Bronx beer with me on a nice hot Friday afternoon. We drank that Slow Your Roll IPA, which you can find in any good beer store or bar near you. If it's a good place, you'll know it because they've got the Bronx there. TheBronxBrewery.com for information on all their selection of craft beers. And thanks to the Bronx for being the official house beer of the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. Thanks to you out there for listening to this show. We hope that you enjoyed this episode. If you did, we'll be back next week with a brand new episode. You can tune in and you can subscribe, rate, and review the show at iTunes.com/UCB Comedy. We would really appreciate that. You can also follow us and connect with us on social media. We're at UCB Digital on Twitter and Facebook. And you can always email us at podcasts@UCBComedy.com. Don't forget, our book club is coming right up. It's August 15th, 4 p.m., the live stream. If you've read The Real Truth with Reed Martin, well, it's your chance to sound off about it. Tell us what you thought. We're going to give our book reports, and maybe we'll have finished it by the time we do that live stream. Let's hope. So we're cramming in some reading right now. Got to get back to that. As always, you can find UCB Comedy content all over the internet at Vimeo and YouTube and Facebook/UCB Comedy, where we've got new stuff coming out, including live streams every single Wednesday at 2 p.m. and our show Ballers Deep, airing right now Mondays at 12. That's Facebook Live /UCB Comedy. You can also connect with UCB on social media at UCB Comedy. And we'll be back next week, as we said, with another brand new episode of this show. And until then, we'll see you on the internet.
This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.